We're here on Daf, Tzadi Vavam Beis, and we were trying to figure out how we derive Meleches Zorek in the case of Arba Amos Mishusarabim from Mishkan. The Mishnah tells us on Daf Kuf, we didn't get to that Mishnah yet, that if you throw an object for Amos in Mishusarabim, if it lands below 10 tfachim in Rishus Harabim, then you're chayev. And the Gemara is now going to go through an entire painstaking sugya here to try to figure out where in the Mishkan did they throw something for Amos in Rishus Harabim. And before we again get into some of the details here, I tried to go over this yesterday with weaving. You know, weaving is I needed just one video. If anybody could send me a link to some sort of a YouTube on Talmudic weaving. Anyway, why is the Gemara so careful and demanding, so to speak, that we find a precedent in the Mishkan of Hotzah? I'm sorry, of Dalet Amos Bishus Harabim in the case of Hotzah. So to explain this, we go back a second time to the third Tosfos here on the Amud, which is Divrei Maskil Hachnasa. And Tosfos says the following, that the Gemara asks, how do we know Hachnasa? Because the case where they pushed forward, whatever the word I want to use is, you know, to the crushing towards the Mishkan from one agola to the other, that's a case of Hotzah, because the agola was a Rishus HaYochid, and they were bringing it towards the Mishkan, which is called the Rishus HaRabim. Or, for example, the contributions that were brought, and Moshe Rabbeinu said on Shabbos, you can't bring any more, because they were bringing it from Rishus HaYochid out into the Machna Levi, which is the HaRabim. And the Gemara wants to know, how do we know Achnosa? So, Tosis points out that, and this is based on a Gemara back on Daf Mem Tes, that there was Hachnasa in the Mishkan, and now the Gemara says that if we have a Svara to derive or compare, I'll call it X for a moment, because that X is going to be Hachnasa or Zrika, we'll get to it in a minute. If there's a Svara to compare X to the original Hotzah, then once we have the combination of A plus B, we have Svara and we have Mishkan, that will fulfill the requirement of deriving a Toldah of Hotzah. So again, let's just get the rules down. To derive a Toldah, in general, from 38 out of 39 malachos, with the exception of Hotzah, all we need is a Svara. In the case of Hotzah, Tosis Ashita is that in addition to a Svara to derive a Toldah from the Av, we also need Mishkan. And that's because Hotzah is a Malacha Grua. So because of that special status of Hotzah, we need not just a Svara, but we also need Mishkan. Now, let's check it out. In the case of Hachnasa, which is a Toldah of Hotzah, we have both A plus B. Why? Because the Gemara, back on Daf Memtes Amid Beis, says that the people were standing in a Rishus HaRabim, and they picked up the Krushim, and they placed it on top of the Agola, which was Rishus HaYochid. That's called Hachnasa. So in addition to what we have here on our Daf and Tzadi Vav, where they passed on the crushing from one agola to the other until they got to the Mishkan, which is called Achnasa, which is called Otsah. We also have Achnasa when they lifted the Keresh and put it onto the agola. Number two, we have a Svara. What's the Svara to equate Achnasa to Otsah? The Gemara says, Mali liyule, Mali lafuke. What difference does it make whether you have a Shina Rishus in this direction, going out from Yochid to Rabim, or in that direction, going in from Rabim to Yochid? So we have both conditions are fulfilled to create a tolda of Hotzah. We have Mishkan and Svar. Now we have Zrika. Now, we have Hotzah, both in Rishus L'Rishus, Yochid Rabim, back and forth, and in Dalet Amos, Birshus Arab. Now, we get to the point of Zrika. Zrika was done. Let's assume, again, this is a point that I have to clarify as we go along. Zrika was done from one Rishus to the other. And we have a Svara. What's the Svara? The Svara is, what difference does it make whether you cause the change in the Rishus by carrying it or by throwing it? So it's Mali, Mali, Masa, Mali, Zrika. Mishkan, we're going to find in the case of Zrika Mishus Lushus. Now I get to Dalet Amos Mishus Arabim. In the case of Dalet Amos Mishus Arabim, what I have is Svara, because again, Mali Masa Benesia Umali Zrika. In both cases, it begins at one point at Tchiles Arba in Mishus Arabim, and it ends 4 Amos later with Anoch in Mishus Arabim. It doesn't matter whether you carried it or you threw it. But we don't have Mishkan. And since in Toldos of Malacha Gruah of Hotzah, Svara is not enough to derive a Toldo, we need a Mishkan as well, although we've successfully achieved that goal in the case of Achnasa, we have not achieved, and we can achieve that goal in the case of Zrika Mirshus Lershus, but the Zrika of Arbamas Mirshus Arabim, that, again in the Makshan, does not have Mishkan. Where do we find in the Mishkan that they built a Mishkan with a Zrika of 4 Amos Bishus Arab? So again, I have pretty much the picture here as far as what the Gemara's agenda is. The only piece I'm missing is the case of Zrika Mirshus L'Rishus in Mishkan. Okay, but let's not upset the apple cart with that. And now we want to find Zrika of Dalet Amos Bishus Arabim in the Mishkan. So the Gemara says it's got to do with weaving. Now, in the building of the Mishkan, there was weaving and there was sewing. Weaving is called Ariga and sewing is called Tfira. Now we know that the curtains of the Mishkan were woven, but where was stitching done in the preparing of the curtains? So apparently, from time to time, even within the weaving process, there were little gaps that had to be sewn together. Now, initially, the Gemara thinks that we could derive Zrika versus Arabim Dalet Amos from what's called the Arge Hayirios, the weavers. The Gemara rejects that, and we'll see why in a minute. And then it moves over to Tofrei Hayirios, right? Those who were called upon when there were problems, like with the Ariga, and they needed to take a needle and create some stitching. Okay. Now, stitching is done with a needle, with a machat. Ariga is not done with a machat. So the Gemara initially thought that the orge hayurios, Omer of Yoshia, zorkin machtem zelizeh. But that's not true, says the Gemara. Because the orge hayurios, the weavers, were not using needles. So, you know, we have our own problem here. Why would the orge hayurios in Rav Ashi's frame of reference throw machtim zelazeh? They, you know, let's say one oreg finished with his needle and then he threw it to his friend. I mean, it sounds very strange to us, to our ears. You know, he lent it to his friend, so he threw it to him. Okay, that's a problem. But the Gemara has a more basic problem. The Argim, the weavers, did not use machtim. So it cannot be that the Zrika and the Mishkan of Dalet Amos Yisra'amim was that of the Argim, if you're talking about throwing machtim. And therefore the Gemara backtracks, reformulates Rav Ashi, and he says, Tofrei Ayurios, Zorkin machtim zelazeh. So that there were also those who were in charge of stitching. You know, they were like the cavalry that was called in when necessary, and the weaving was not sufficient, and in those situations they had to start sewing it up. And when they finished their job as sewing, and there was the next guy in line, you know, it's like Mishmarot, so the person in the next shift would receive the needle that was thrown to him for Amos Brishus Arab. The Gemara says that that's impossible. Why? Because if you're talking about the Tofrei Ayurios, then you have no proof that one sower was four Amos distanced away from the other sower. And that's called in the Gemara's language, Dilma Gabi Adodi Adodi Oyasve. Maybe they were sitting in close proximity. So even if we would chuck the machat to the next guy online who would take over for him, but why would he do such a thing? Why didn't he just give it to him from hand to hand? Okay, fine. So Gemara goes through various nuances here until it comes back to the original, but not in terms of the machat. But the weavers would throw one to the other something called a buchyar. So again, I can't tell you all the nuances here, but I'll just tell you what I do understand about where this buchyar comes into place. We have a shasi and an orev. Now the shasi were a bunch of threads that were put on, you know, stretched onto two rollers, that's called mesich. And the rollers would now, in a sense, stretch out the threads. Then you have the orev. The orev is a single thread that was wrapped around a spool. So the spool had a, what word can I use? I'll call it a small peg or a pole. And the orev was wrapped around that pole, if you follow what I mean. Now, the spool had to be contained in some sort of a, what we would call in Hebrew, a misgeret, you know, some sort of a framework. That framework is called a buchyar. Now, what happens is that when you were in the process of ariga, at some point you would have to throw the buchyar. Why would you throw the buchyar? And again, all this is being done in a Rishus HaRabim, because the whole environment of the Mishkan is Rishus HaRabim. You would throw the buchyar. Now what I understand here, again it's very limited because I need that video, is the following. That when the Orev has to create the weaving, it has to go in and out, and again back down again. Right? So you had two, what we call Bote Nirin, if you remember we discussed this in the past, which were kind of square utensils that had strings or cords that, you know, went up and down with a hole in the middle, which is called a bate nirin. And what happens is that the Shasi would go through that Nekev, and then what they would do is they would move it up and down, these two Bate Nirin, to create an effect of one thread going up, and then they would lift this, it would go down, and then the next one would go up and go on, while the Arev thread was being woven around and around. Now the width of this contraption here is 4 amos. Now, at one point, you have to throw the Arev thread all the way around. And the Arev thread is held in the spool by a buchiar. So there would be a thrusting of the buchiar in order to wrap it around. So basically, when he throws the buchiar, he's not throwing it at anybody. It's not like the Gemara's original understanding, which again boggles the mind, that they were throwing needles one to the other. And the Gemara says, well, wait a minute, maybe they were, you know, closer in proximity, so you would just have to hand it to him and not get lazy and throw it. But rather we're talking about throwing it yourself as a weaver. The weaver himself had to throw this buchiar so that it would wrap around, and then he could put it in the other direction to create the weaving. So the Gemara objects to this as well. That would not be a Meleches Zrika, because what happens is, when he throws the Buchiar, he's still holding on to the Arev thread. So the throwing of the Buchiar allows the Arev thread to stretch out of the spool, so to speak, and he's holding it on one side. That's called in the Gemara's language Ugdo Biyado. And if it's Ugdo Biyado, that's not Zrika. Zrika means that I completely let something fly and I'm no longer holding on to it. As long as I'm holding on to it, then that's not Zrika. This reminds me very much of a Gemara, a very famous Gemara in Gittin, where a man throws a get at his wife, but he's still holding on to the string, and therefore that's not called throwing it into her lap or her hands. So you're not chayav for zrika if you're still holding on to something that, you know, attaches you to the object, and the object's attached so you can pull it back. So the Gemara comes up with the answer of niska basra. He says that in Hebrew, he says the zrika achrona shel chut ha'arev bein chut ha'ashisi. Kshenigmar achut, in other words, when the weaver finally gets to the point where there's no chut left, and he's just got that last little piece of chut that's attached to the spoon, and is held by the buchiar, the spool, whatever the word is. Anyway, so at that point, he lets the buchiar fly, and it lands on the ground. Again, he'll pick it up later because he wants to use it for the next round of weaving. So now the Gemara has a problem. Why? Just give me one more minute. I'm sorry. This is very very tense for me. I'm just trying to, I don't know beans about weaving, but anyway, at some point he throws the buchiar and it's out of his hand because the chut is just the last piece of chut that's going around. So the Gemara is not happy with this because of something called a mokom ptur. What happens here? The buchiar is actually going in between the various chutei ha-shasi. We're back to the shasi, right? There was a shasi that was going up in the batei nirin, and then there was a shasi that's going down. The arev thread has to be woven in between the two, and then it has to go back to the other side. So the Gemara wants to claim now that the area that's located between the higher chutei shasi that are on the way up and the lower chutei shasi that are on the way down, that's called a makom ptur. Now, why is that called a makom ptur? So the answer seems to be dependent upon something that's called bittul. Bittul means the following, that if in Rishus HaRabim you can identify an area that is separate from the Rishus HaRabim, it has its own independent personality, and it's an area that has less than the width of 4 tefachim, that area becomes a makom ptur. And therefore what's going to happen is that since you have threads going up and down, and you're putting the arev thread in between those threads, that area is not batel to the Rishus HaRabim. As we said before, somehow miraculously it takes on its own personality. It's like, what shall I say, a fire hydrant, we used to always say, is a makom ptur, right? It's not really part of the Rishus HaRabim. You know, nobody's walking there. Nobody has access to that area. It's completely closed off by the weaving process with all the machinery that you're using. So now, what's happening is, when he throws the buchiyar, the Gemara thinks that it's going through a Rishus a makom ptur. The only time you can chai for zrika is when you have a zrika and Rishus HaRabim, where it is a Rishus HaRabim, but not a makom ptur. So again, just to read you the language of the summary of Rashi here, he says, Harei abuchiyar nizrak bein chutei hashisiyah elyonim lechutei hashisiyah tachtonim v'yoso makom eino batel rishus harabim v'eino rachav arba tfachim. Because the various threads are close to each other. I don't know exactly, maybe there's a tefach separating them. And that sets up that area as a makom ptur. Ella, says the Gemara, now we have to introduce the original premise that this is not a solo operation, but he's throwing something to a recipient. And the Gemara says, Shekein Orge Yerios, Zarkin Buchiar, Lisho Alehem. Now what that means is that the Gemara is departing completely from this very complicated structure of the weaving process. The Gemara is saying that amongst the weavers, I'm going to put it in Balabatisha terms, there were wealthy weavers and there were poor weavers. And apparently building this buchiyar is not a cheap commodity. So that when the weavers would switch their shifts, and a rich weaver who had a nice supply of buchiyars, I would call it buchiyarim, I don't know what the plural, then he would lend an extra buchiyar, and maybe even they would both weave simultaneously in order to speed up the process, I don't know. But he says, Mishayu shnayim, hayolo shnayim, hayomashil echad lechavero. So how do we know again that the second weaver, who's now receiving the buchiyar, is 4 amos away from the first weaver, who's throwing this buchiyar? Again, the old question, maybe they were sitting next to each other. And the Gemara answers, Matu hadodi b'chefes. And what it means is that they had to distance themselves one from the other, all these orgia yurios, because if they were sitting too close to each other, then one hand would knock into the other hand, and at this point, what are they doing? They are pulling tight the chuta orev, right? So, you know, you have the, you know, this woven garment that stretches 4 amos, and you know, when he gets to the, let's say that the, you know, the next weaver online is sitting on his right. So when he gets to that point where he's all the way on the right, if the next weaver is sitting right next to him, and at this point on the right side he's pulling the arev string as much as he can all the way to the end of the curtain that he has woven, then he's going to hit and bang the next guy in his hand, let's say, and he might injure him. In the Hebrew, he says, "Yodeim pogos zebaze." Right, the hand of weaver number one is now pogea, and it comes in contact with weaver number two. Kshaya moschim, when he was moteach, when he pulled the chute ha'arei b'svasa yiria, and the Gemara says v'dilma. Okay, maybe they weren't sitting, you know, one on top of the other, but it doesn't mean that they had to be four amos separated one from the other, and therefore dilma shalchufe havi mishalchfe. He says that, how do you know that they were sitting side by side, which would force one weaver to require a certain, you know, space on his right, because there's another weaver on his right? Maybe they were situated one in front of the other. Again, in the Hebrew translation, he says, "Shayu yoshvim ze lifnim vizela achor." In other words, they weren't sitting in one row, as we say, rows of weavers, you know, one to the right and one to the left, but rather they made a line, so to speak. And furthermore, the Gemara, and then in that case, once again, if he chucks over the buchyar to the guy behind him, he doesn't have to throw it. Maybe he could hand it to him, or if he throws it, it's a very small. And furthermore, the Gemara says, "Misha ilei me'adadi." Why do you assume that each weaver had to come up with a buchyar, and therefore he might have to, and might have to borrow one from the other? Vatani, we have a brisa, Luda. I don't know, Luda's one of the Tanoim apparently. And he says, the Pasuk in the Mishkan says, Ish mi malachto asher hema osim. Why did the Torah have to indicate that every Ish did his malacha, which he did? I mean, the whole Pasuk is superfluous. Melame, this teaches us, mi malachto hu osa vieno osa mi meleches chavero. In other words, each person who did the malacha in the Mishkan was independent. And kulam ayu muchanim klei umnusam, v'lo ayu tzrichim lishol zemize. So we have two kashas so far. We're going to get a third kash in a minute. First of all, maybe they were situated one behind the other, and therefore there was none of this problem of elbowing one to the other. And number two, the Braisa seems to indicate that there was no borrowing and lending. Every one of the Osei HaMalacha had his own kliumnus. Vesu, and third question is, if you're going to derive it from the Orgei HaYerios, then Mavir Arba Amos B'Rishus HaRabim Minolan D'Mechayev. Now, at this point, it would seem that the Seder Advarim, the way I understood it, was completely wrong. I thought that when the Gemara embarked upon this analysis in this sugya, we knew the following, let's see, one, two, three, maybe four things. We knew, number one, that there's a malacha called Hotzah. We knew, number two, that there's a halacha called Hachnasa. And we knew, number three, that there's a halacha called Dalet Amos, which is Mavir Dalet Amos, when you carry something for Amos. Now, I had a problem, if you recall. There was one piece of the puzzle that I couldn't fit in, and now I hope I'm going to be able to fit it in. My problem was that Tosfos establishes two requirements to derive a tolda. In the case of Achnos, we have both. There is a precedent in the Mishkan, and that's the Gemara and Daf Memtes. There is a Svara. That's called Achnos. I assumed that in the case of carrying something for Amos, Brishus HaRabim, likewise, we had a combination of Mishkan and Svara. And now we want to know about Zorek, Arba Amos Brishus Arab. So the Gemara says the following: you've done such a great job, according to your logic, in convincing us that the Dalet Amos in Rishus HaRabim was a Zrika, and that is, if you assume A, that the Argim were using a Buchyar, and there were the rich people who had a Buchyar, and there were the poor people who wanted to participate in this Avodah, this glorious work of weaving, they didn't have a Buchyar. And number two, you were assuming that they were distanced one from the other by four amos, and therefore, when Mr. A finished his shift, he would throw the buchyar over to Mr. B. Then you've done such a good job, according to your shita, that I don't know where do I have a precedent in Mishkan for Havaris Dalet Amos. There was only Zrika of Dalet Amos in the Mishkan. Was there a Havara Dalet Amos? You're telling me, well, there was a Dalet Amos of this Ariga in the Rishus HaRabim of the Mishkan, the environs of the Mishkan. And when did they traverse those four Amos? When they threw the Buchyar. So where was Mavir, someone who carries something, Arba Amos in Rishus HaRabim? And the Gemara answers, you have no choice. Ella, call Arba Amos Shusarabim Gemira, Gemara Gemira. You're going to have to assume that Havaris Dalet Amos Shusarabim breaks all the rules of Melechas Otzah and its toldos. It does not require a pasuk. It does not require a svara. It does not require Mishkan. Why? Because Dalet Amos Shusarabim is Halach Lemoshe Misinai. And guess what? Part of the Halacha Moshe Misina of Havaris Dalet Amos Shusarabim is that Zorek is also Chayav. So again, we still don't know about Zorek Mirshus L'Shus, but what we do know is that when we get to Arba Amos Mirshus Shusarabim, then the entire entity of Dalet Amos Mirshus Shusarabim as a told of Otzah, whether it's in a case of Mavir or in a case of Zorek, is all based on Halacha Moshe Misina. So what the Gemara is doing now, it's taking a long, complicated sugya, and Berzon here has been sweating it out. You know, I'm losing my hair over this already for a day or so, because I don't know enough about weaving. And it's completely throwing it out. You know, we thought in the premise that there's no way you could get Zrikas Dalet Amos unless you have Mishkan. And we were racking our brains how to come up with Zrikas Dalet Amos in the Mishkan. We came up with a very iffy kind of structure, which has many, many kashes on it. And now the Gemara says, forget it. I got news for you. The whole enterprise is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. And that's what it means, Maver Amo Dalet Amos Jusarab Hilchas HaGemira. And if it's a Hilchas HaGemira, included in that Hilchas HaGemira is also Zrika. Okay, Rabbi, I'm sorry, I just wanted to get to that point. Now you're the ball's in your court.
I'm having difficulty with this whole thing. I can understand Shini Rishus. You have Otzah, you have Achnasa. Where is there even a Havamina anywhere that Havara Dalet Amos is a Also, kind of try really to find a source in the Mishkan. We don't even have a svara for it. We have a svara b'achnasa. We have a svara b'hotzah. We don't have a svara b'havara. So I don't understand the havamina. And then the Gemara comes up with a beautiful answer. Bachla Moshe Misina.
Right.
I can come up. You know, you can't wear a talis on Shabbos. Halachla Moshe Misina. What's the source? Where's the marker for this bechlal?
Well, that question I can't answer. I don't know exactly, you know what Moshe Rabbeinu received at Har Sinai, but it sounds like the Gemara is assuming that one of the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu transmitted to Moshe at Har Sinai was Havaris Dalet Amos, and that really, what should I say, completely completely undermines the entire sugya from A to Z. I mean, we started with the sugya. You know, where do you find Dalet Amos in the Mishkan? And the Gemara says, don't even bother racking your brains. There is no Dalet Amos in the Mishkan. This whole thing about throwing chutim, you know, this way and that way, you know, you got to duck every time you walk into that area because there's a buchya that's flying in all directions. Forget about that whole thing. It's all halacha l'moshe misina.
There's no source telling you that when they threw it, it was Dalet Amos.
Right.
Exactly. The assumption that the loom was Dalet Amos. Again, that's an assumption based on nothing.
That I can research for you. I'm pretty sure I have a whole discussion here about how this loom was Dalet Amos. But I wanted to point out something interesting. And I don't know in Derech HaLimud where this fits in. But there's a discussion here in the name of not just one Rishon, but three Rishonim. The Ramban, the Baal Hamor, the Meiri. I mean, they're coming from different areas of the world. And they all want to know what is like the secret of this Halacha Moshe Misina. What meaning does it have? And he writes the following. Again, in the name of those three Rishonim. Shechiyuvo shel mavir o zorek arba amos v'sarabim halach l'mosh misinai tam hu shu mishum she'arba amos shel odom chashuvas lo kirishuso v'havi kemotzi mirshus hayochid l'shusarabim. If I understand correctly, what the Rishonim are suggesting is that a person, a human being, in Rosh Hasharabim, has a domain, a control, over a certain radius, and that makes it into his own Rosh Hashayochid. When he leaves that domain, or that radius, he is back in Rosh Hasharabim. So if he carries something, or it's even more, in a sense, easy to vision, in the case of Ezrika, he's being Zorek from Rosh Hashayochid out into Rosh Hasharabim. And methodologically, what bothers me is, you know, I never thought that, you know, Rishonim would have, so to speak, the chutzpah to ask this kind of question. Well, what's the mechanics of the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai? You know, Halacha L'Moshe Misinai is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. Like, for example, Mirz Hashem at 3:15 today, I'm teaching a shiur in Halacha. So one of the points that's going to come up is the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai about Sofek Orlo B'chutz Laretz. So, you know, I don't know if I'm obligated as a Lamdan to ask myself, well, Sofek Orlo B'chutz Laretz, why is it Lekula? And Sofek Avelus is also Lekula. Halacha Gidivrei HaMekel B'Ovil. This Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. I don't know if... And I can give you a list of Halacha L'Moshe Misinai's, you know, Lang Vidi Yiddish Agolus, as we say, and I don't know if in every time I have to ask myself what the reasoning is. But I think if Rav Soloveitchik were here, I think what he would say is they're not asking some sort of philosophical question, but they're asking something about the gedarim, the way the halacha operates. And the way the halacha operates is, and again, the Rishonim want to understand why Zorek or Mavir Dalet Amos is not an av unto itself as halacha L'Moshe Misinai. And the Rishonim want to say that it's not a separate av because this, in effect, is called Shini Rishus. Again, you could argue against the Rishonim, but just to hear what they're saying, that Dalet Amos is called the Shini Rishus. You know, this brings us back to Bav Metzia Daf Yud Aleph, if you remember, where the Gemara says that Dalet Amos shall Adam Konoslo, that four Amos of a radius is considered a Kenyan. If a Hefker falls into Dalet Amos, you know, again, rabbinically at least, he's Koneh, because it's his Rishus HaYochid. It's like his Chatzah, his private Chatzah, in a radius of Dalet Amos. But this could explain the halacha of Kluta Kavisha Huncha Dami. Again, I'm not giving you a philosophical explanation, but I'm saying within the framework of halacha, the way that halacha, what the Rav used to always call the, not the why, but the what, you know, the mechanics of halacha, you begin to understand this, pardon the expression, the craziest principle that you ever heard of in your life, of Kluta Kavisha Huncha Dami. Well, what's the Kluta Kavisha Huncha Dami? But maybe we could talk about a Rishus, and a Rishus somehow grabs onto an object, so that when you're four amos this way and you throw it four amos that way, then the Rishus of Rabim now picks it up at the end of the four amos. And in this footnote that I'm quoting to you, he quotes Rabbi Menachem Zemba, who says that if you read the Rambam carefully in Perek Yud Beis Milchus Shabbos, the Rambam writes, "Hamavir b'rshus harabim itchilas arba l'sof arba, harehu kimotzi m'rshus l'rshus." The Rambam somehow felt compelled to add five words, "Harehu kimotzi m'rshus l'rshus." And according to Rabbi Nachum Zemba, the reason why he added those five words is to answer the same question that the Akronim were trying to answer. What's the meaning, or the mechanics, if you will, the what, of this Halach L'Moshe Mi-Sinai? Now, the whole balance of this footnote, if I get a chance to prepare it, because you have to really know the entire chapter of Hazoreg, is to try to actually reject this approach with many, many objections, and there are many sugyas that seem to indicate that a person doesn't have his own Rishus HaYochid within a Rishus HaRabim, and the whole Gemara and Bab Metzia that we spoke about is all a Drabbanon, and when we say that Rishus HaRabim, that Arba Amashal Adam Konesol versus Arabim, that's only Durabbanon, a separate Takonic, you know, that we shouldn't create altercations. But yet, Mavir Arba Amas versus Arabim is Doraisa, and this is a Shidi Rishus, according to, again, that answers a few questions. I mean, it if you accept this theory of the Rishonim, and now we're adding the Rambam into the loop, you're talking about a tolda. It's not an av unto itself. You know, you and I would have thought intuitively we're breaking new ground with this halacha mishnah. This is some sort of a new entity, and it should be an av. Which would mean, by the way, that if you violated both hotzah and havaras dalet amos in one halama, you'd be chayv two different chatos. Nein, you're only chayv one chatos. Mavir Dalet Amos is only a tolda. And how is it a tolda? I mean, a tolda has to be somehow conceptually similar to the Av. Anyway, I'm leaving this with you for food for thought. There are so many interesting aspects of the sugya. The most important aspect is the one that I'm the least proficient at, to understand how weaving works. But the more subtle aspects of the sugya are very fascinating. The Gemara goes through a whole Amud Gemara, you know, trying to rack our brains and figure out where do we find Dalet Amos of Zrika in the Mishkan. And at the end of the day, after all the ins and outs, you know, the Gemara just completely rejects it. You know, which always leads us to the philosophical question of, you know, Ravina Ravashi, what did they decide to include in the Talmud? And what did they decide to omit? You know, sometimes, you know, for example, if you were writing a code like the Tur or the Rama before the Tur, you would just completely skip. The Rif would completely skip this whole sugya because it's not relevant. But maybe, you know, we could add that there are relevant points over here because, you know, we have to understand Meleches Arigo, we have to understand Meleches Tfira. More than that, we have to understand what happens if you do a Zrika, but you're still holding on to the, you know, the strings are still attached. You know, the various dimensions here. And the last thing, which I think is not least, is that we have a Melacha, or at least a Tolda, which is derived from Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, breaks all the rules of Meleches Hotzah. There's no Pasuk, there's no Svara, there's no Mishkan. Batich, as they say. That's Arabic, I think. And that is Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, but it's a Tolda. And the Rishonim will actually formulate what they think is the mechanics of that Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. All right, let's start the new sugya. This was all my attempt to review yesterday's Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. What's the deal with the Mekoshesh? The Mekoshesh was put to death because he violated the Shabbos. What exactly was his violation? Which malacha did he violate? So this parsha is at the end of Baal Loscha, if I'm not mistaken, in Sefer Bamidbar. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu that this Mekoshesh Eitzim is Chayev Skila. So what exactly was his violation? So we're familiar with a number of answers to this question, but we should be surprised by the first answer, which is a Hemshech of our Gemara. And he was Chayev for Hotzah. But not Hotzah in the classic sense, but Mavir Arba Amos B'Shus HaRabim. Now, where was this Rishus HaRabim? Apparently, what happens is that the Malacha of the Mekoshesh was somehow in the environs of the Machna Leviya, which, by the way, is going to lead us to a very strange conclusion in this Gemara, that the Mekoshesh was not the evil person that we think he was. He was actually L'shem Shamayim, if you know what I'm talking about, if you're familiar with this sugya. But we'll get, I don't want to spill all the beans up front. So if he was doing this Mekoshesh, and it was in Rishus HaRabim, he was apparently carrying, let's call it sticks, or a piece of wood, and he was carrying it for Amos Rishus HaRabim, that's a tolda of Meleches, a Meleches Hotzah. Again, the pasuk seems to indicate completely the opposite, that this was not a Rishus HaRabim at all. The pasuk says, Vayimtzu Ish. They found a person, and Chazal assumed that this was not in the public eye. He was trying to do this privately. And the Ran says that at that point in time, when the Klal Yisrael were walking through the Midbar, he says that when they had to get from place to place, the Midbar actually had the status of Rishus HaRabim, because it was during the Nesios, you know, the Masos through the Midbar. So that Ran has to be taken under advisement. What defines Rishus HaRabim? For example, were they actually trudging through that area at that moment? Were they in a state of Chanoya? What makes it Shishim Ribui? But in any event, the Chiddush is that Vayim Tza'um, we could find them in the Midbar, because that was the place where they would walk and travel from one Machna to the other. That's an interesting aspect of this sugya. Then the Gemara says, the Masnisa Tana, but we have a Brisa that says, Tole Shava, that the Mekoshesh Eitzim was not collecting, I think a better word would be transporting wood from place to place, but rather he was actually cutting down the trees. And that's called Tolesh. Tolesh is a told of Meleches Kotzer. But finally we have Rav Acha b'Rav Yaakov Omar, Ma'amer Hava. What he was doing by collecting these various pieces of wood into one place. In Ochinami, they were Tlushim, they were already cut off. He was not Chayef for Kotzer, but they were spread around. And if they were spread around and he had to gather them together, then he violated the Malacha of Ma'amer. Okay. So now the Gemara says, L'may nafkemina, what are the implications here as far as which malacha he's chayev? I mean, my dahava hava. Okay, so there was a parsha that took place, an episode of the Mekoshesh. Why do I have to know which malacha he violated? And the answer is for Isi ben Yehuda. Right, there's a famous statement of Isi ben Yehuda that there's one malacha on the list which doesn't, although it's a malacha, it doesn't generate any sort of punishment. And that's called the Megillas Start, L'chid Rav. The Omar Rav, Matzasi Megillas Starim Be Rabbi Chia, which was found somewhere hidden in the Beis Medrash area of Rabbi Chia, V'kosuv Ba, and it says there, Isi Ben Yehuda Omer, Avos melachos arboim chaser achas, but eino chayov ela achas. Okay, so now we have to figure out what does that mean, eino chayov ela achas. Now, one thing is clear, that according to Issa ben Yehuda, there's a malacha that does not generate a punishment. He's not chayav for it. Could be that according to Issa ben Yehuda, there are 38 malachas, excuse me, that don't generate. But what we're doing here is, we're trying to chip away at certain malachas, or at least at one malacha, that for sure Issa ben Yehuda would agree that you're chayav for. And that's the malacha which was violated by the Mekoshesh Eitzim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe that he has to be put to death with skila. So in other words, let's assume that according to Issa ben Yehuda, a person violates all the malachos b'shogeg behelam achas. And Issa ben Yehuda says in such a case that he violated all 39 malachos, einu chayav ela achas, which means that he brings one chatos. One chatos for one of those 39 malachos, and that malacha could be the profile, the description would be that that's a malacha for which if he had violated b'mezid, he would be chayav misa. And if he violates a b'shogeg, he's going to be chayav a korban chatas. Now, the case of Issa ben Yehuda would have to be, by definition, a shogeg situation. Because when he uses the language einu chayav ela achas, that language does not make sense if you're talking about a maze. You can't put to death a person more than once. So when you say ela achas, we're talking about a shogeg. So the Gemara says that Issa ben Yehuda cannot be oblivious to the Mishnah. Achas v'sulo, are you telling me that he's only chayav one chatos when he violates all the malachas for asnan? The Mishnah says, Avos malachas arboim chaser achas, v'avina be'minyona lomali, v'yom rab yochan, sh'masson kum eleches, chayav al kol achas v'yachas. So we see from the Mishnah itself, and the Mishnah says there are 39 malachas, he's going to be chayav 39 chatos. How could Issa ben Yehuda possibly hold that he's only chayav one? Issa ben Yehuda could not possibly argue against the Mishnah. So let's first clarify what is the position of Issa ben Yehuda. Ema, says the Gemara, let's reinterpret the statement of Issa ben Yehuda. Almost malachas, there are 39 malachas, but eino chayav al achas mehen. It wasn't that Issa ben Yehuda went as far as to say that the various malachas will not generate multiple chatos, that's for sure written in the Mishnah, but rather the Mishnah, according to Issa ben Yehuda, is indicating that there is one particular malacha that you're not chayav for, which would mean you're not chayav misa b'mezid, and ipso facto you're not chayav a chatos b'shogeg. But Issa ben Yehuda did not reveal to us in this Megillah Starim exactly which malacha he excludes from this chiyuv. Here's where we want to determine what was the violation of the Mekoshesh for which he was chayav misa, because Issa ben Yehuda would have to admit that that malacha is one of the 38 malachos that generate a chiyuv chatos, a chiyuv misa, because you see in the case of Mekoshesh that he's chayav misa. So that's what the Gemara is suggesting here. Now, let's go back to the statement of Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Right, so Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel says that that Mekoshes was chayv for Meleches Hotzah, or Mavir. So Rabbi Yehuda says, Pshita Leidem Mavir Chayv, that the one malach that we're looking for in Issa ben Yehuda's frame of reference, which would not generate a chiyuv, could not possibly be Mavir. Then we had another possibility of Mekoshesh, that was the Braisa, Masnisa, Pshita Leidem Tolesh Chayv. certainly Tolesh would be the malacha for which Isi Ben Yehuda would have to admit that you are chayv. So take it off the candidacy list for that malacha that you're potter. Rav Acha bar Yaakov, shitulei de ma'amer chayv. Mar sovar, ha'mias lo mesafko, mar sovar ha'mias lo mesafko. So according to each one of the various shitos, respectively, we know that it's poshut that this malacha is not included in our doubt, which I don't know if it was Isi Ben Yehuda's doubt as well, as to which one malacha would be potter. Now, just on the side, because, I mean, we're running out of time, I just want to make a comment here about Megillah Storim. What is this business of Megillah Storim? So there's a short sefer, a small sefer, that has a lot of chidushim called Binyan Halacha. Have you ever heard of it? And just for your own interest. It was authored by a childhood chum of my father's. His name was Chaim Zimmerman. Have you heard of Chaim Zimmerman? So he's famous for a book called Hagan HaSar, which I have in my library, about the international dateline. But he also published a book called Binyan HaLacha when he was a youngster. And in his introduction, he has a piece about Megillah Storim, which is something I remember from my youth. And he says the following. We have halacha, I think it's a sugi in Tmura, that dvarim shebalpeh iyata rishayim lomra b'ksav. And Rebbe, of course, was matir, but up until Rebbe, any Tana who had chidushim in Torah, he would have to transmit them orally and not commit them to writing. So Rav Chaim Zimmerman, based on various sources, comes to the following chiddush, the following conclusion, that the iser of dvarim shebal peh iyata rishay loma leksav is called shinui hamesores. That there are two mesoreses in Torah. There's Torah shebiksav and it's Torah shebal peh, and you cannot confuse the two. So that body of Torah which is biksav has to be transmitted biksav, and dvarim shebiksav iyata rishay loma bal peh. And that part of the Torah that has to be transmitted orally has to be transmitted orally and not by through the written word. And therefore, if he would write Torah Shebal Peh Biksav, that would undermine the Mesorah. So Rav Zimmerman says the following, that the Mesorah HaTorah is a Talmud, is a Rebbe transmitting the Torah to the next generation, to his Talmidim. That could not be done publicly. When Rebbe authored the Mishnah or edited the Mishnah, that was a violation of the Mesorah HaTorah, because from now on, the Torah Shebal Peh would be meant to be transmitted written in a text. But then there was something called the Megillah Storim. And Rav Zimmerman claims that Tanoim would write down their Torah, that which they received from their Rebbeim, and that which they came up on their own, but they would hide it, so that it would not be part of the Mesorah. So in our case, Isi Ben Yehuda had his own private manuscripts that he wrote, and it was storim, it was put away privately, so it would never be used by the public. But what happens is, as you and I know, whenever you write something privately, eventually it becomes public, and somebody gets a hold of the manuscript. And in this case, Rav says that he actually got hold of this manuscript that was kept in hiding in his uncle's, base medrash, somewhere between the books. You know, people like to look over old manuscripts. And he found a manuscript of Isi Ben Yehuda, which is called the Megillah Storim. You know, it was a whole Megillah, it was a whole scroll of Chidushim, but it was kept clandestine, you know, it was private and it was hidden. And therefore, it was not a violation of this. So there's no Iser Ksiva of writing down Torah Shebal Peh. We think that, you know, you hear Torah Shebal Peh, you got to memorize it, you're not allowed to write notes. That's not true, according to this radical shot. You're allowed to write whatever you want, as long as it's not part of the Mesorah, as long as it's not given for public access. And you can keep it privately as a Megillah Storim. The last question that I want to leave with you, we don't have time for this Ksam Sofer, maybe we'll pick up the Ksam Sofer tomorrow, is this whole business about Isi Ben Yehuda, that there's one malach on the list, we don't know which one it is, that doesn't generate a chiyuv misa v'mezin and a chiyuv chatos b'shogi. Just to mention an interesting question here that comes up in this Sugya Mekoshesh Eitzim, Moshe Rabbeinu was confused as to whether or not he should be punished. We just established, on the one hand, that Mavir Dalet Amos Pirshus HaRabim is Halach LeMoshe MiSinai. So Moshe knew that when he got the Mitzvah of Shabbos. On the other hand, we're saying here in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Shmuel that the sin of the Mekoshesh Eitzim was Mavir Dalet Amos Pirshus HaRabim. How is it possible that Moshe didn't know that he would have to be put to death for this violation? Moshe himself received Mavir Dalet Amos Pirshus HaRabim. So what do you mean he didn't know whether he should be put to death or which Misa? I mean, he's obviously a tolda of Hotzah, and therefore he's Chayev Skila. He says, Tzarech Lomar, quoting Achronim, he says that Mavir Arba Amos Lomatsanu B'Mishkan. Since the final conclusion is that Mavir Arba Amos is not in the Mishkan, is Moshe Mesupak im Yeshla Miso? So is it that the Aloch LeMoshe MiSinai of Mavra Arba Amos Jusarabim means that he's Chayav Miso? And it could be possible that Moshe thinks that Michal Shabbos, on the one hand, might be considered like an Oved Avodah Zorah, that we often equate Chil Shabbos with Oved Avodah Zorah. But Moshe, you know, was not clear. It wasn't clear to Moshe until he got the Halacha Moshe MiSinai, perhaps at the time of the Halacha Moshe MiSinai, it wasn't clear to him that Mavir Dalet Amos, which wasn't in the Mishkan, would be a Chiyuv Misa. Maybe it would be a separate Isur if we equate it with, say, Oved Avodah Zorah, then he would be Chayv Skila. We might equate it with other Isurim, which are capital in motion. Stam Misa is Bechenek. So we don't know exactly if the Chet of this Mekoshesh was Arba Amos. Moshe Rabbeinu needed a separate word from on high that we should subsume it under Meleches Hotzah, and therefore he'd be Chayv Skila. That's a possibility. The question here is very excellent. If Moshe got the Halacha MiSinai about Mavir Dalet Amos, then why was he in doubt about the punishment for the Mekoshesh Eitzim, assuming his violation was Mavir Dalet Amos? Now, in this footnote, he writes, he says that Megillah Starm Histirua Kadeshalo Yovo Lilmod Mimena. Okay, that's similar to what we said before in the name of the Binyan Halacha. And he quotes the Igros Moshe, and the Maram Bennett, that Afli Zikaron Bi Alma Osur Meikra Din. That even to write something for your own memory would be prohibited according to the strict letter of the law, El Mishum Eis Lasos Lasheve Feres Osecha, in order that his Torah shouldn't be forgotten. Therefore, it was permissible to write the Megillah Storah. So that's just an addition to what we discussed before. Now, as far as Ma'amir is concerned, which is the Shita of Rav Acha regarding Mekoshesh, Ma'amir is an Av Malacha, listed in the Mishnah back on Ayin Gimel, and it applies in a classic sense to an Adam Sha'osaf Melach Mikarka B'mokum Sha'osim Bo Melach. So he gathers together various grains of salt. That's called Ma'amer. And L'chora, from the pasuk itself, it would seem that the violation of the mekoshesh was ma'amer, because the word mekoshesh means lelaket. For example, in Shmos Hey, it says vayofetz ha'om b'chol eretz Mitzrayim lekoshesh kash, which means lesof kash. That's how Rashi says it in Chumash. So in the footnote here, he quotes the Kli Chemda, who says that there's a machlokes where the ma'amer is chayev, even if he gathers them together without tying them in a more permanent fashion. And in the case of the mekoshesh, lo koshar mashe imer. So Rav Acha says that a ma'amer is chayev even without a kesher. So even though the mekoshesh did not tie together all these woods with some sort of a strap or whatever, he's going to be chayev mishum ma'amer. Is doch muchach shamaloch oisa ma'amer even without kesher? Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel and the Braisa assume that ma'amer is only chayev with a kesher, and therefore they have to come up with alternative malachas which the mekoshesh was chayev for. Okay, then this is where we're gonna stop for today.